You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
In the final week of January, the Astros still making big moves, and we go around the league to get familiar with all the prospects in the American League West. Meanwhile, you've been pulling out all the old wax out of the closet and listening to your Billy Joel albums of old. He's coming on May 20th. Are you a big Billy Joel guy at all?
He's as old as I am, I guess. So, yeah, sure. I mean, you got to like it when Billy Joel's coming to Safeco Field. Friday, May 20th, get your tickets now, I guess. So, going to be some entertainment at Safeco, whether it's baseball or music this summer. So, kind of cool. They just announced that today. Something on the calendar to look forward to in May.
Listen, Greg, you sound a little nonplussed. It's Billy Joel, man.
I saw Billy Joel when I was in high school, and that was a long time ago.
Maybe it makes me feel young to think that he's relevant and fun to listen to still.
That is pretty cool, yeah, no doubt about it. You know, everybody's still kicking, and we're all still here, so, yeah, I'm good with it. I'm going to leave it up to you, though, to do the Billy Joel singing if you want to go that way. So
I don't think we have the time. But we would go right off the old Glass Houses album. That was an old-timer.
There you go.
So seriously, enough goofing around, Greg. Let's get right down to business here. This team has made so many moves, and it's the time of year at the end of this particular week. MLBPipeline.com comes out with the top 100, all the prospects in baseball. So now we all turn our attention to kind of evaluating the rest of the organization. In the case of the Mariners, so much attention on the big league club and that remake under Jerry DePoto. What is left underneath? Who are some of the top names?
Great question, Dave. I think prospect-wise, the Mariners, they're pretty young. I mean, they're top guys. Yeah, I remember a couple years ago when their guys were just littered. You talk about that top 100 in baseball coming out, and the Mariners were thick through there with the Dustin Ackleys and the Danny Holtzons and then Walker and Paxton and Nick Franklin, Mike Zunino. I mean, these guys were top guys through and through, and the Mariners always ranked real high in the rankings because of that. You know, they always kind of weight those top guys, kind of how you judge a system. And right now, a lot of those guys came up, didn't make it for whatever reason. A couple of them by injury, a couple of them been traded. You know, Franklin, Ackley no longer with the programs, and in the minors, so Holtzman's been injured, so those guys are no longer qualified as prospects, and the guys that are kind of young, and the next group, I guess, coming on the horizon, they're led by Alex Jackson, their first round pick in 2014, number six overall, and a young kid just turned 20 on Christmas Day, in fact, so he's a young guy, didn't have a great year last year, they kind of pushed him, they opened him in Class A Clinton, in full season Clinton, and he struggled a little there, so they dropped him back down to Everett, and he finished out the season the year in Everett. So they're expecting him to take a big step forward this year as he turns 20. A big kid, 6'2", 215, right-hander. When they drafted him, a lot of people thought he was the best right-hand hitter in the draft, and a kid that converted from catcher in high school to play in the outfield now. So he's definitely one to keep an eye on, and it's at the top of that list. I think he's the guy that's probably going to be in that top 100 somewhere. And after him, I guess you get down to some names. You kind of wait to see some guys develop. Another name a lot of people are familiar with because he was a first-round pick, DJ Peterson, the top pick in 2013. And he's another kid that started real well when they first brought him into the pro ball out of New Mexico and struggled last year. So just didn't have a real big year with their top kids last year. Peterson, they're looking for to kind of bounce back this year and kind of working him at first base now a lot more and see where he goes with that. So played mostly Double-A, bumped him up to Tacoma for a few games at the end of last year, and I would guess he'll probably start the year in Tacoma and be a guy that waiting in the wings to take that next step. So those are two of the top names, and certainly a lot more beyond that, Dave, if you want to get into those guys.
Well, you touch on a good point, though, Greg, which was, it's just, seems like this yesterday, really. The Mariners were the ones with, the preponderance of names up toward the top of these lists. Had so many guys with such high expectations. And yet, not that they haven't fulfilled them or couldn't still fulfill those expectations. But it's such an inexact science. Are you one to pay particular attention or get wrapped up in this type of stuff, or do you just say, look, let me know when they get here?
Well, it's certainly fun. You know, I think like all baseball fans and writers, people that follow the game, one of the fun things to do is watch these kids coming up, and there's certainly a lot of anticipation and build-up, and, that's a fun part of the deal. I mean, you kind of want to see these guys develop and hit it big when they get there, but it is not, especially in baseball, as we all know, it's a tough deal. It's not an exact science, and the Mariners certainly been a case for that, and DePoto is a good one to ask that for. I mean, you could make a pretty strong case that Jack Cerenzik, maybe isn't here anymore because a lot of these top prospects didn't make it. DePoto came in and interestingly kept the same scouting director, Tom McNamara, who drafted most of these guys, but changed the player development program around quite a bit, brought in Andy McKay, and DePoto will tell you that he was there, drafting for other teams when the Mariners were picking these guys, and he said, hey, every one of them, you'd think those top kids, that was a good pick. That was, nobody was arguing with him. Nobody said, whoa, what are they doing there? And things, maybe didn't work out as well. So he doesn't blame that so much on the guys picking them as maybe what they've done with them and how they're developing and working with these kids. So that may be a thing that changes. But, like I said, some of this stuff is just blind luck. I mean, Holtzman was certainly, number two overall pick in 2011, this guy everybody thought was the safest pick coming out of the draft, and he's had nothing but arm problems since. That's a problem you hit with pitching sometimes. And Zunino, another guy, number three overall pick the following year, there beside this guy's got everything you'd possibly want, and he just has struggled. They maybe brought him up too soon. There's a lot of people think, and they would probably start him out at AAA next year and let him kind of get that offense under his feet a little better. So sometimes things just it's baseball, and you don't hit them 100%, that's for sure. But you'd definitely like to hit a higher percentage than the Mariners have with their top picks in recent years. So didn't have a top pick last year, Dave. Gave it up for Nelson Cruz. But you can't really argue with what Cruz provided. So, that's another thing about the draft.
DR, it seems like the right time to talk about prospects. Rangers just had their mini camp last week, or I guess this week. As the case may be. So start us off. I mean, you wrote a great piece on Dylan Tate, who I think is a fascination to a lot of Rangers fans. You want to start with him?
Well, yeah, Dave. The Rangers have five players coming out on the MLB.com pipeline for top 100 prospects, and Dylan Tate is one of them. He's a pitcher who was drafted fourth overall last year out of UC Santa Barbara. Has an excellent fastball, 92 to 98 miles an hour. Pretty good slider, working on the changeup, working on the curveball. Rangers love his intelligence, his work ethic, great desire. This kid could come pretty fast, maybe in a couple of years. Pete Gonzalez was their number one draft pick in 2013, and he made his major league debut less than 2 years later. So, obviously Dylan Tate needs to start out at Class A, maybe High Desert, work his way up to Frisco, and then maybe Round Rock in 2017. But this is a kid that the Rangers like, and he's kind of spearheading their pitching prospects for the next few years. When they traded Cole Hamels, when they acquired Cole Hamels, they traded away three very good pitching prospects, and that's kind of put a debit in the farm system, but Dylan Tate is the guy that they think will spearhead the next wave.
Yeah, so he's an exciting one. I thought the note that you had in your piece that caught my eye was that he was the highest drafted pitcher since Kevin Brown in 1986 by the Rangers?
He was their highest drafted player since Kevin Brown in 1986. A guy like Mark Teixeira was like fifth overall, but Dylan was the fourth overall, so again, you got to go back to Kevin Brown for a draft pick that high.
Yeah, well, so that will help put those expectations squarely on his shoulders. We know there are definitely some bats coming. Joey Gallo's a guy I feel like we've talked about a lot. Where did he end up on the list?
I think he's their number one prospect right now, Dave. And I think what he needs to do is go to AAA and really get his confidence back, get his stroke back, you know, get his game back together. You know, he got off to that great start last year in Frisco, was doing really well, and they were about ready to promote him to AAA when Adrian Beltre went down. They had to call him up to the major leagues, and, you know, he struggled a little bit, young kid. You know, he's got the big swing, a lot of strikeouts, great power. Went back to AAA, struggled down there. That was a little bit of a setback for him. So I think he really needs to go down to AAA Round Rock this year and get his game together, get his confidence back, start feeling good about himself again.
Yeah, and then they've got a couple of, you know, Gal is a guy who we talk about being, you know, on the cusp. Of course, he's already, you know, gotten his cup of coffee. But then, you know, next on the list, couple of outfielders, but these guys are really, really young. We're talking about Lewis Brinson, Nomar Mazara. How far away are these guys?
Well, Dave, I think both of those will be a AAA Round Rock this year. Mazara's got a great bat, great kid, really smart, really knows how to play the game. Rangers really, really like him as possible their future left fielder. Obviously, we have Josh Hamilton at the big league level, but you know, Mazzara's a guy who could come at some point this year, depending on Josh's health, or maybe in 2017. But they really like his bat, his swing. You know, he can play the outfield, but this is a guy who could be a, you know, in a few years, not right away, but a productive middle-of-the-order type of hitter. Winston's a center fielder. He was drafted out of high school in 2012, same year as Gallo. Great defensive player, can really run. Didn't have the power of Mazzara, but, you know, this kid hit .332 last year at three levels, and the Rangers really like his defensive skills. He's a guy who could be a frontline center fielder. Again, he'll start at Round Rock, and we know that Delino DeShields will be the center fielder in Arlington, but Brinson's a guy who could come pretty quickly and give the Rangers some depth.
Is there, you know, of those two, I haven't seen the list yet. I don't know who came in a little bit higher or who represents the higher ceiling of the two.
You know, it's hard to say because Mazzara's got a big bat that can really, you know, this is a guy who could hit 300, you know, 25 home runs, 100 RBI. Brinson's more of a speed guy, but, you know, score some runs, run the ball down in center field. It's early to say who has the higher ceiling, but they're both very legitimate prospects.
Yeah, different styles, obviously. What about pitching? Beyond Dylan Tate, who else is on the come?
Well, Luis Ortiz is a kid that they drafted out of a California high school a couple of years ago. Last year, you know, he pitched out of Class A Hickory, had some really good numbers, only made, I think, like 13 starts. The Rangers are bringing him on slowly. Big kid, real big kid, needs to watch his conditioning. But it's got a great fastball, you know, like all kids working on the secondary stuff. But the Rangers were thrilled when they plucked him late in the first round 2 years ago, and they really like him a lot. You know, he's not the college pitcher that Dylan Tate was, so he's going to need a little more time. But again, with Dylan Tate, he spearheads the next wave of good young Rangers pitching.
You know, of the names we've talked about, how many of them were at the minicamp?
Dylan Tate was there, Mazzara was there, Gallo was there, Brinson was there. Ortiz wasn't there yet. He's a little bit younger than those guys, probably not ready for a major league mini camp in Arlington.
Okay. You know, I this might not be totally accurate. I don't know who keeps track of it exactly, but the Rangers have had a good reputation in the last decade and a half of steadily turning out really good young talent from their system. Is there a sense for how stocked their system is at the moment? Is it, you know, is it on par with any recent years in memory, or is it a little depleted? Where would you put it?
It's a little bit depleted, and the big reason is the Cole Hamels trade. You know, they sent three pitchers to Philadelphia. They also sent their young catcher, Jorge Alfaro, and they sent Nick Williams, another really good young outfielder who was very similar to Brinson. You know, so they're going to be a little bit thin up at the upper levels right now just because of that trade, but there's still a lot of talent there. I think after that, there's going to be another wave of good young pitching coming up from the lower levels. You've got a kid named Yohander Mendez, who they really like, and Ariel Jurado is another young pitcher. Some kids are just learning how to pitch, just really getting into the meat of their development, you know, the high A, the double A level. They've looked good down in the lower levels. Hickory had a really good pitching staff last year, but that was a low Class A South Atlantic League team. You know, those guys need a couple of more years. So I think they're going to need a little bit of time to fully reload. But, you know, they got the young outfielders, Brinson and Mazzara. They got Tate, who could come fast. They still got some pretty good talent coming up. You know, Chichi Gonzalez pitched stuff here last year with the Rangers, but he's still a young prospect, and he'll probably get some more time at AAA to continue his development. But he's another guy who they're really high on and have been willing to hang on to.
So as we kind of wrap it up, TR, you know, it ebbs and flows year to year how much talent teams have down there. But as I said, they seem to be consistently pretty strong. Why is that? Why would they have an easier time of that than other clubs seem to have?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, they've drafted pretty well. You know, getting Gallo with I think, the 39th overall pick in 2012 out of high school was a tremendous pick. But I think also they've been very aggressive in Latin America. They've spent a lot of money down there. They've got some good young talent that's just coming up into the United States. I think that when you supplement good drafting with aggressive work in Latin America, that really – Those are the two big avenues to build a farm system.
Okay, well, they've done it very well over the years. TR, thanks for the insight on the prospects. And by the way, when we do this next time, it's going to be February, so I'm sure you're busy right now folding shirts and getting ready to head down to Arizona.
Not too long, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Well, there he goes. That's TR Sullivan, MLB.com Extras, the Texas Rangers edition. Hey, Alan. You know, the offseason isn't over. Billy Epler still has a question mark in left field. What sense do you get their satisfaction so far with the way this offseason has gone, though?
Well, you know, it's funny, Dave, because Angels fans are not, they're not very happy right now. I think it's, you know, mainly, pretty much entirely because they wanted the Angels to go out and sign a big-name left fielder. They wanted a big bat for the middle of their lineup in left field. They saw how unproductive their left fielders were. And I think, you know, at least based on, you know, my Twitter feed, Angels fans are not very happy right now. And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, the GM usually absorbs the brunt of frustration with the fan base, even when it's not really a GM who's responsible for what's going on. General manager's job, every offseason he's given a budget, and he's got to stick to that budget, and he's got to do his best with that budget. And, you know, this was a really challenging offseason for Billy. And I spoke to him about this recently. It wasn't just coming into a situation where there was a lot of tension between the coaching staff and the front office and trying to mend those fences. It wasn't just putting together a development staff, a front office staff, and reconfiguring the coaching staff and getting a feel for an entire organization. It was also that this was a roster that had a lot of holes, that didn't have a lot of real talent in the upper levels of their system, and who was already, as we talked about a lot, coming up really close to the luxury tax threshold. So he did the best he could. He signed a utility man and a catcher on the free agent market for relatively cheap deals, took a flyer on some guys coming off bad years to kind of maybe platoon or form a good mix in left field, and claimed a bunch of guys on the waiver wire, took a lot of Rule 5 guys, because when you're trying to build depth and you don't really have the guys in your system, that's kind of the way that you have to go about it. You kind of got to pick up guys that other teams kind of cast aside. And, you know, it's been a difficult offseason, but part of the GM's job is to kind of be the face for an organization. And even if he's not the one who calls the shot on the budget or whether or not the Angels sign a star player, he's the guy who fans always identify for any move that goes on in the offseason. So I feel like fans are not really huge fans of what Billy Epler has done so far this offseason, but I think a lot of them need to understand, too, that he's just doing the best with what he's given right now.
Yeah, and I think those are all really fair points. He is in one of the tougher spots, especially among the newer general managers. And, you know, he is a new general manager. Have you had a chance to get to know him a little bit this offseason yet? What kind of a guy is he?
Yeah, and I've spoken to a lot of people about Billy Day for a story that's going to run on MLB.com really soon. And, you know, the interesting thing about Billy is he doesn't really seem to fit a particular mold. He isn't a former player. He didn't play. He pitched a little bit in junior college and then in UConn, and then he had shoulder issues, and he didn't play anymore. And he also didn't, he didn't get an advanced degree from an Ivy League school, so he doesn't really fit the mold of these young, up-and-coming, mid-30s sabermetric guys that are getting these big-time front office jobs right now. And it would seem that it's a lot harder to move up through the ranks when that's your situation. But, you know, the great thing about Billy's background is, you know, he came up and he was taught by some of the grittiest and most experienced of scouts that there are. He was hired by the Rockies in 1999, shortly out of college. He took a financing job in Southern California. He said he realized after 3 months that he just didn't like it, so he tried to get into baseball. Got hired on as a part-time scout, and he just continued to move up the ranks from there. He impressed a lot of people with his work ethic, with his energy, and his people skills. The one thing that people bring up about Billy a lot is he's got great people skills. He's a good listener. He's the kind of guy that kind of makes everyone in an organization feel like they're important, feel like they're included. And so, you know, it was a tough trek for him, but I feel like a lot of people identified him as a GM in waiting for a long time. And, you know, he always talked about how, you know, when he got the job, that this was kind of the job that he wanted. He wanted to go back to Southern California, born and raised in San Diego. And, you know, he wanted to work down here, and he wanted to be the GM with a franchise that has the best player in the game. So he always felt like this was a great situation for him. He almost, you know, a lot of people don't realize he almost got the job in 2011. When Jerry DePoto got hired in October 2011, Billy Epler was pretty much the number two guy. If it wouldn't have been Jerry DePoto, Billy Epler probably would have gotten that job.
Huh. Interesting. Well, now he's got it, and now he's going to have to, you know, to make something of it. We talked about the confines of this roster situation for him this offseason, but we all know that the lifeblood of any organization is going to be the young talent that comes up through the system. MLBPipeline.com releasing the top 100 this week. What about some of the top prospects for this Angels organization? Who are some names we need to know?
Well, right now they got Victor Alcantara listed as number one in their organization. And he's a big-bodied right-handed starter who throws really hard. And he's got a good slider that he still needs to get a feel for. And he's one of those guys that has the raw stuff that you feel like when it comes together for him, you know, maybe he could really be something. If not in the rotation, then maybe in the bullpen. You know, the Angels don't have anybody in the top 100. I think they're the only West team that doesn't have somebody in the top 100. But there's a really obvious reason for that, and that's because they traded Sean Newcomb and Chris Ellis, which I believe both of Sean Newcomb definitely is in the top 100. I'm pretty sure Chris Ellis is, too. They traded both of them to get Andrelton Simmons this offseason. So, you know, it's kind of tricky if you look at it like that. There are a couple guys, though, that they drafted this past June that are really worth watching. One of them is Taylor Ward, the catcher that they took with their first-round pick. That was a selection that was, criticized a little bit by some of the draft experts. They felt like there were some other catchers that they had on their board that maybe had a little bit more upside. But the Angels really like Taylor Ward, at least under Jerry DePoto, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do it under Billy Epler. Under Jerry DePoto, they really tried to draft guys. They weren't really looking for guys who had a really high ceiling. What they were looking for a lot was guys who had a really high floor, which means that, you know, there wasn't that much risk involved, and they were kind of already, pretty advanced for their age, that they could kind of rise through the system quickly. That's sort of the type of picks that you got to make when you're trying to replenish a farm system like the Angels have. Tanner Ward is already pretty advanced defensively behind the plate, and the good thing about him is that he really hit very well in the summer. That was the big question about him, is would his bat come around? And obviously, you know, it was rookie ball and low A ball, and we'll see what he does if he starts the season in Class A Advanced Inland Empire, or maybe if he progresses to Double A. But he's definitely going to be one to watch. And another one to watch will be the second pick that I did, which was outfielder Jermaine Jones. Jermaine Jones is kind of the opposite of Taylor Ward. He's one of these high-ceiling, really athletic guys, very toolsy. Angels desperately need some outfield depth in their system. They need some cost-controlled outfielders, guys who could, you know, come in and maybe play every day someday. Jermaine Jones is still a long way from that, but he's a really athletic guy, and it's going to be interesting to watch him in a full season. And David, if I could mention one more, it would be Roberto Baldoquin, Cuban shortstop. The Angels committed a lot of money to two Decembers ago. He had a really rough summer, but the Angels front office kind of expected him to have a rough summer because he was just coming from Cuba. He hadn't played organized baseball in like 2.5 to 3 years. And he did. He really struggled. He did show some good signs, too, though. It's going to be interesting to see what he does with a full season, because he is the reason why the Angels are not able to sign anybody for more than $300,000 in the next two international signing periods. They have a lot invested in him, and they really need him to really show something this summer.
Hey, Brian, this week in the podcast, the news very fresh right now about Doug Fister and the Astros bringing him in on a one-year deal. What do you know about the deal, and more importantly, maybe about his health?
Well, as far as I know, he's healthy. I mean, he went through physical and passed, and the deal's worth a reported $7 million for 1 year. He could get $12 million with bonuses. I'm sure that is all depending on how many innings or starts he makes. So he's probably poised to make some pretty good money, but adding him a one-year deal makes the rotation pretty deep now. Makes a pretty good rotation even better. I know they had been interested in Giovanni Gallardo as well, but unlike Gallardo, they signed Fister, and they don't have to give up a draft pick. So it's a good one-year addition really make a pretty deep rotation now, because you're going four or five deep now. You got some solid arms, and I think that's exactly what they were looking for.
So to that point, you've got Keuchel and McHugh at the top of the rotation. Kohler's, Fiers, Feldman. Is Feldman kind of the odd man out in this equation?
Well, we'll have to see. Feldman's coming off that shoulder injury that cost him all of September, and I was able to talk to Feldman last week at FanFest, and he says he's 100%. And says he feels great, and so and when he was healthy last year, he pitched very well. So I think he's going to come to camp, and he's going to have to prove he's healthy. And if he does, and you can put him, he wins a spot in the rotation. That's a good problem for the Astros to have. But yeah, Fiers is another guy who could get a spot in that rotation. But they're very solid one through four, and now they have all these options later in the rotation. I mean, we haven't even talked about Straley and Wojciechowski and even Brad Peacock, who missed all of last year. So they're going pretty deep. It's just going to be a competition in spring training. I mean, they're going to have five guys in the rotation. Right now they have six guys you think could plug right in there, the six guys that we mentioned a little while ago. They can't all make it, so it's going to be best man for the job. And when you create competition and you got some good pieces like they do, that just makes the team that much better.
All right, whoever ends up on the short end of it, that stick, though, do they go to the bullpen as a long guy, or do you suppose they – at AAA to just stay there in the starter capacity in case needed later?
Well, it depends who it is. I think I don't see Feldman going to AAA at this point in his career. Fiers, I think could be rotation, could be the swingman, long relief guy. I think you saw some of that last year in his brief time with Houston. It just depends who it is. Health is an issue. We all know you're going to need more than five starting pitchers. You're going to need 9-10 starting pitchers. So having the depth that they have is really good right now. Don't forget they signed Wandy Rodriguez as well to a minor league deal. a blast from the past. And, you know, I think he's more of an emergency guy. If a couple of arms fall off, you can put, you know, a veteran guy in there and be okay. But they have a lot of options, and they've given themselves a little bit of security if there are injuries, and you got to suspect there's going to be a couple along the way. But those, like I said before, those are all good problems to have. If you got six guys in the rotation and you don't have a place for them all, you know, maybe you trade one. Who knows? But you know, we'll have to see how it works out in spring training.
Well, yeah, boy, a lot of depth in the rotation at the moment, anyway, for this Astros team. Let me ask you this, though. Did it come as a surprise to you? Had you heard anything about this coming in? I mean, this seemed, to me, and I'm a little more on the outside than you are, but it kind of blindsided me.
No, not really a surprise. I mean, I knew they had been on the hunt for starting pitching, and the guys out there, you kept hearing Gallardo and Pfister. Those are kind of the two main names. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I knew they were going to sign Pfister when I woke up this morning. But, you know, not a real shock. I think Luno had been on the hunt for pitching all along, and you know, even though spring training's 3 weeks away, it wasn't like, you know, they're done. You still knew they were going to put some feelers out, just like I think they could have some feelers out for some offensive guys as well, maybe on the infield. But, you know, you wait, and the free agent market's been a little slow to unfold, and you know, they kind of bided their time a little bit, and for whatever reason, Pfister wound up being a good fit here.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty interesting news, big news, Astros signing Doug Pfister. Now, let me ask you this, though. Forget other additions they may make in the free agent market. As we had in the spring training less than a month from now, fans get really geeked up about prospects. And MLBPipeline.com, their top 100 out into this week. Who are some of the big names that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, I think the name everybody, you know, has on their lips right now, if you're talking Astros, is A.J. Reed. He's MLB.com's first-ranked first baseman as far as prospects go. And, you know, the big slugging, he was a two-way player at Kentucky, you know, high draft pick. He led the minor leagues in home runs last year, I think in RBIs as well at two different levels. So he hasn't played above Double A yet. So I think you might see the Astros handle him like they did Correa last year. Start him at Double A, move him quickly. If he does well at Triple A, we could see him up here pretty quickly. You know, that's not to say that he can't come to camp and win a first base job, because we all know it's kind of wide open right now. And Reed showed up at camp last year, was not in great shape. So I'll be interested to see what he looks like when he hits Kissimmee in a couple of weeks. But he's the number one guy everyone's looking to, and I think he'll make an impact with Houston at some point this year, rather. Alex Bregman, of course, the number two pick last year at shortstop. He's going to be in big league camp. You know, it's just interesting with him how he's going to fit into the pitcher. Will they switch positions for him at some point? Because he is he was a junior when he was drafted. So he's, you know, he's 21 years old, almost 22 years old now. When the season starts, he'll be 22. So, you know, he's going to be major league ready sooner than later. Where's he going to play? A couple of their more interesting guys are the two young outfielders they took last year out of high school, Kyle Tucker, who's Preston Tucker's brother, and then Daz Cameron, the son of Mike Cameron. You know, both of them got their feet wet at Greenville in the rookie league last year, so they're a few years away, but guys to watch. As far as pitching goes, Joe Musgrove, their minor league pitcher of the year last year, he's going to be in big league camp as well. Big guy, very imposing, 6'5", 255 pounds. Really had a fine year last year at three different levels and was absolutely dominating. You know, I don't think he's going to win a spot in the rotation, but we could see him in the Triple A rotation. And, you know, next year, Feldman's a free agent. Pfister's a free agent. So there are going to be holes in that rotation. So you could see guys like him and Michael Feliz, another one of their prospects. Another one to look for, Francis Marte, right-handed pitcher, young guy, only 20 years old, throws really hard, got up to Double A last year. And another name to look out for, I think he's probably going to start the year in the Double A rotation, maybe finish in Triple A. But again, Astros have traded away a lot of pitching the last few years. But with guys like Marte and Musgrove and Feliz and David Paulino, they still have that pipeline coming. So, you know, that's you know, look at their rotation now. They have two homegrown guys in Keuchel and McCullers, and then some guys they got off the off trades and free agents. But you do have to have some more of these guys coming through the pipeline, and with these arms, the Astros certainly do.
Jane, also at the end of January, typically teams have their big fan fest gatherings and celebrations for the weekend, that kind of thing. The A's just had theirs. Anything interesting or particular come out of the weekend?
Yeah, they were. They got a good showing by, you know, returning guys, newcomers. I know, you know, one of the guys that was looking forward to it a lot was Sonny Gray, just because he wasn't able to attend last year because his girlfriend was giving birth to their son. And so this year they came right after they celebrated their son's first birthday. And he was in Nashville, and I guess they had their first big snowstorm in a while, so he was a little scared he wasn't going to be able to get out here. But he made it and was very excited to be there.
All right, good for him. Good for him. You know, speaking of Sonny, so maybe this will be a year where he changes up everything, right? Able to get out to the Fan Fest. You know, his thing the last couple of years has been a little bit of a decline in the second half of the season, right? And Lord knows why that may happen. Some guys are fast starters, some are slow starters, whatever the case. But in his case, does he have any sense at all why it is that he has struggled a little bit in the second half in recent years?
I think for him, I mean, you know, it seems like he's been around a while now, and you know, this will be his third full season in the big leagues, but he's still very young, and I think it takes some of those young guys a while to really build up, you know, those innings. And, you know, you kind of see that dip in the second half with him, particularly in September. His ERA is above 4 in September and October, and I believe that's the highest of any month. You know, usually we never see those numbers from him. We have such high expectations for him, too. So that really just kind of makes those struggles stand out. And it was hip soreness last year that kind of eventually shut him down in September. So, you know, he's you know, working really hard to avoid all of that, doing a lot more hip stuff, more core stuff, focusing on those parts of his body, just because they have caused him a little bit of trouble in the past, particularly down the stretch. So he's incorporating those more into his workouts, you know, making a conscious effort to go into the season stronger in those areas. You know, it's with him, it's really tough to find fault with, you know, his overall body of work. We saw him finish third in the Cy Young voting last year. That was really exciting for him, not something that, you know, he even said this week that he really thinks about, you know, going into the season or even after the season. But, you know, he said it's nice to be in that conversation. And, of course, he always wants to be in that conversation, but he wants his work to speak for itself. And he never really has any certain numbers as far as, you know, innings, strikeouts, wins in mind. But he does have the goal of just staying healthy all year, making 33, 34 starts, you know, competing every 5 or 6 days. And then he believes, you know, all those other numbers, the wins, losses, everything will play out the way they're supposed to. So that really is his focus. And you can tell he is making a concerted effort, you know, to be able to make that happen.
Is that something that he came up with on his own, you know, or did he consult with training staff to say, like, you know, what do you think it is, and let's work on core? I mean, you know, how does something like that evolve?
Yeah, the A's training staff, they're very involved with every player, and before, you know, each player goes home for the offseason, you know, they map out programs for every player, and it really caters to each player, what they need to focus on, you know, maybe certain areas that they're more apt to injury. So I'm sure this was kind of just a collaboration between Sonny and the training staff, who do a great job with everyone.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll certainly be something to watch. You can only imagine, you know, if he was at peak form toward the end of the year, in these last couple of years, the numbers that he would have put up. But you know, this is also a time of year, Jane, when we start thinking about spring training. It is right around the corner, and camps get full. We have young kids there with some of the veterans, and the prospects mix in. As fans start thinking about making that trip down to Arizona and who they might be looking to see, you know, they talk about the future of this franchise. Are there some names for the top prospects we might see or that are worth keeping an eye out?
Yeah, there's actually several this year. I think for the first time in many, many years, you know, the A's farm system is filled with a lot of, you know, exciting high-ceiling guys, guys that were, you know, either drafted by the organization or guys that within the last year or two, you know, through all those crazy trades that we've seen have come through those trades. And a lot of them will be in camp. They do like having these young guys in there, just getting a little taste of, you know, the big league experience, you know, through spring training, of course, and just being around big league guys. I think that goes a long way, helps them feel a little bit more comfortable when they, you know, come back and the next year. I know, you know, last year Matt Olson, one of their top prospects, came into camp, and you know, you're a little unsure. All of a sudden, you're thrown in a room with a bunch of big leaguers. You know, the treatment is a little bit different too. The amenities are a little bit different, and of course, you know, the level of play is different. And I know that he relished that. You know, got a lot of at bats during camp, and he's one of those guys that will be back in big league camp this year. And something to watch with him. I mean, the A's drafted him as a first baseman, but he was playing for AA Midland last year. He did get almost 60 games in right field, and you know, the A's of course value versatility so much. So it'll be interesting to see in camp, you know, how much he plays at first, how much he plays in the outfield, what they're, you know, maybe looking to do with him, because he is a guy, comes with a lot of power, a really exciting power hitting prospect who isn't too far off from making his big league debut. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if we didn't see him this year, you know, maybe as a September call-up, 2017 for sure. I mean, by then he could even be an everyday player depending on, you know, how things go this year for him. And another guy, Sean Manaea, a big lefty that they got in the Ben Zobrist trade from the Royals this past summer. I know Bob Melvin was speaking at a fan fest recently about how he went to Arizona, saw him in the Arizona Fall League, and was just really, really impressed. And the guy put up great numbers, has a really good fastball, and you know, Melvin was saying he can spot both corners with any pitch, which is kind of rare for a lefty, but just a hard throwing guy that has a lot of people in the organization excited. And you know, even though they would like to get him some experience at the AAA level, because he's never pitched above AA, you know, Melvin did call him a wild card for the rotation, you know, coming out of camp. They already, of course, have a ton of depth there. So I'd be surprised if he did break camp with the big league team, but for sure someone to watch, even that first, second, third month of the regular season, just because I think they know that with a little grooming in AAA, he'll be ready to go shortly thereafter.